That Gavotte by Johann Sebastian Bach is played by Julia Fischer. She's in our studio today. I mentioned that to you yesterday, that Julia would be here. Well, she's here, and we're going to talk to her as we get underway. And my name is Terrence McKnight. You're listening to Evening Music on WNYC, 93.9 FM, WNYC New York, WNYC.org. You know, I wanted to play the rest of this music, but I was just talking to Julia kind of offline, and I want to have this conversation with her so you can hear her talk about this scenario. Let me tell you who Julia Fischer is, first of all. My name is Terrence McKnight, and you're listening to Evening Music, and Julia Fischer is here. Julia is a violinist. She's also a pianist, and she's in town playing with the New York Philharmonic. Lauren Mazel is going to conduct her Friday and Saturday. She's here playing Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 5. And Julia started playing when she was 3 years old. She was running around the house telling her mother she was going to be a musician. She didn't know if she wanted to play violin or piano. And Julia, you can just jump in whenever I say something that's incorrect. And her brother was a pianist. And then so Julia kind of, you know, her family thought it would be cool for to have two different instrumentalists. Her mother was a pianist. And by the time Julia was 8 years old, she played her first gig with an orchestra. Right, Julia?
Perfect. Wonderful.
I remember all that.
That's the best entrance I've ever received. Thank you very much.
Julia Fischer is spelled F-I-S-C-H-E-R. She was in our studio yesterday or the day before on soundcheck.
It was the day before, actually.
Yeah, it was on Monday. And you can go and hear her in conversation with John Schaefer, and you can hear she brought her violin and played in our studio, too, so you can hear that. But for this hour, she's going to be here talking to us, talking about music that's important to her. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. And, Julia, I really had some intro music for you because coming up on Thursday, tomorrow night, we're going to feature this concert that I heard just a few weeks ago. This was recorded at the UN a few weeks ago, and we're going to broadcast this tomorrow at 8 o'clock. So join me for this tomorrow at 8 o'clock. This is Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble. They played this concert at the UN. I think this is kind of fitting for Julia. So you can hear this full concert of Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble tomorrow at 8 o'clock during Evening Music. This is part of our Thanksgiving special, so join me for that. So, Julia, back to you and your start in music. Like I said, you were 3 years old, and you were playing both violin and piano.
Yes.
Yeah, and so now you're here, and we're going to cover some of that turf in between those 21 years. But now you're here.
22. Now I'm 25.
Are you?
Yeah.
Wow, boy, how the time flies. And so kind of big news. I mean, since I last saw you, which was 2006, you were named like Classical Musician of the Year. You signed a record deal with Decca, which mm-hmm. is a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations on
all
that. Anything else that hasn't hit the internet that I should know?
Well, actually, the piano came in only in the past year. So I did play piano always, but I did my debut as a pianist last January. Playing the Greek Piano Concerto with orchestra in Germany and in Russia as well. So, that was actually, for me, the most important thing to happen, quite honestly.
Yeah. Now, here's something that you said to me just a couple of years ago. We were talking about music, and you, when I met you, you had come to Atlanta to play Tchaikovsky, and I asked you what the piece meant. I was like, Julia, what is this music all about? And here's what you said. I feel like Tim Russert. Here's what you said.
For me, it was always difficult to put into words what music is about, because for me, music is a language itself, and you cannot translate it into our language, because then you wouldn't need music. You need music because it's impossible to express those emotions and characters and feelings in any other way. That's why we have music, and that's why we listen to music. And when I listen to music, then it's really just the language of music itself. And it's for me absolutely unique.
So having said that, what is this Mozart about that you're playing here tomorrow?
You know, some of the things I said a couple of years ago, I would prefer not to be repeated, but luckily this is something I could repeat just again. It is really, I don't think you should try to put music into words. Music starts where words end, and you shouldn't try to say, okay, this is about love, or this is about, you know, a fight in the family or whatever. I mean, you can't put it into words. If you could, you wouldn't write a music piece. You would simply write a play or write a letter or put it down in a story.
Here's the composer that Julia Fischer is going to be playing Friday and Saturday here in New York. She's going to be playing Mozart's Violin Concerto, but here she is playing it's a rondo by Mozart. It's a rondo number 1 in B flat major. Julia Fischer.
Thank you.
That's Julia Fischer playing music by Amadeus Mozart. Julia, along with the Netherlands Chamber Orchestra, Yakov Kreisberg conducting. That's a rondo by Mozart. It doesn't belong to a larger composition. It's just a standalone piece by Mozart. Julia's here with me at WNYC, 93.9 FM, WNYC New York, WNYC.org. You can talk to both Julia and I at our website, well, WNYC's website, and go to the blog, go to WNYC.org, click on music, talk to Terrence. You can send your comments or questions for Julia. She's going to be with us for another 30 minutes or so, talking about what she's up to and what she's been up to. I started by talking about Julia starting music at age 3. By 8, she was playing with an orchestra. Julia, I remember that you were in a class of kids, like 30 young people who were playing instruments, and all 30 didn't go on to become like violinists at the level that you are, but a lot of them are still involved in music, right?
Yes, absolutely. So I started with the Suzuki method. And we had an amazing first teacher, Helge Thelen. He actually moved to Australia when I was like 12 or something and started having a big violin class there. And so we were like 30, 40 kids. And I would say that maybe half of them became musicians. And of course, a smaller percentage, but some of them became soloists. So it's actually very nice to run around and know that there's one face who actually started with me playing the violin when I was 3 years old.
Yeah, so... What does, I mean, even if you don't become a concert violinist or a professional musician, what do you think that music at that age kind of, does it teach some type of discipline, or how do people who grow up use that music in their life, as you've seen through your friends?
It is true that many doctors try to analyze what is good for kids, and music apparently is fantastic for discipline and concentration and even logical thinking and everything. But for me, that's absolutely not important. The important part is that, first of all, you have something that never anyone can take away from you. You learn to play an instrument, you learn to express yourself, and that's something that will always stay with you and that you can always come back to no matter what's happening in your life. That's number one. Number two is the fact that you can communicate with other people through music. You don't even necessarily have to speak the language, but you can just meet and play a piece by Mozart and you understand each other through music. It's a way of communication and it's a language. Number three, and that's probably the most important thing, is that you learn to deal with your own feelings and emotions as well as the feelings and emotions of other people. Somebody like Mozart or Beethoven or Brahms put down a piece because they had something to say, and they had something emotionally usually to say. Sometimes it might have been even of a philosophical range, but they had something to say, and by studying their work and studying their pieces, you're basically studying what they had to say and what they wanted you to know. And usually in great art, not only in music but in any art form, the difference between art and entertainment is that entertainment usually is what is important at the moment in that time. So something that we all love today is not important anymore in 10 years because it only counted to us today. Art, on the other hand, will stay with you forever, and something that has been written 200 years ago will still be important in 500 years from now because it belongs to the human race. And that is something I think what especially classical music has.
So did you ever see yourself, I mean, growing up when you were 8 years old or 10 years old, and I know you as a listener, you're thinking, wow, she's such a polished interviewee. And if you're thinking that, it's because Julia has been doing radio since she was like young. You did your first radio interview when you were what?
8, actually. I was 8. But I wasn't very fluent at that time.
Do you remember what you talked about when you were 8 years old on the radio?
It's actually funny because it was on a Swiss radio, and I found the tape a couple of years ago and I listened to it. And it's kind of cute because I speak with a very, very high voice, and I just remember that the reporter, he asked me, so I saw you playing the violin and the piano, so what do you want to become when you're old? And I answer with this very high voice, violinist and pianist, because I like both. So that's actually what stayed with me.
But you're not even old yet, so maybe that's going to change. When you get old, Julia, what do you want to do?
First of all, I want to have a family. I want to have kids, of course. And I want to have spend time with my family. In terms of music and in terms of what I want to achieve is certainly I love to teach. And I love to bring music to young people. And at the moment, I'm doing that by going to schools or talking to school kids. Even yesterday, actually, in my concert with New York Philharmonic, yesterday was the first concert. There was a school class from Chicago there, and I would go backstage and talking to them and so on. So that is something very important to me. And I have this kind of dream. I don't know if I'm ever being able to put that into reality, but to find a school, actually, and to have not a music school in terms of where they only learn music, but a normal school where music just has a more important role.
I think there are some schools like that in New York. Are you interested in moving to the States?
No, I don't think so. I'm just too happy to live in Germany and in Munich.
What is it? Our economy is bustling. I mean, help is on the way. Julia Fisch is here at our studio at WNYC. Julia, I want you to introduce not necessarily this next piece of music. You're not involved in this music, but I know it's a composer that you like. And I want you to just introduce him to us. This is, we're about to hear a jazz suite, number one, by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Oh, wow. Good choice.
Yes.
Very good choice. Dmitri Shostakovich, Soviet composer, so basically Russian composer, who was born in Leningrad, or at that time it was St. Petersburg. Today it's in Petersburg as well. He lived from 1906 until 1975 or something like that. He stayed in the Soviet Union all his life. He never moved to the Western countries, although he was very much against the regime, and he had a lot of problems with all the politics and being involved. And he actually, in his music, he always tried to defend human rights, and he tried to defend freedom. So actually, after the Second World War, he was put on a list that he is a composer writing against the regime, and he got into even more trouble and even death-threatening problems, which made him find a way to compose actually exactly how the system wanted, but to express still exactly what he wanted to express, and that's actually the greatest achievement.
Julia Fisch here in our studio at WNYC, setting up music that we're about to hear, the Jazz Suite No. 1 by Dmitri Shostakovich. This is Maurice Janssens conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra. Thank you. Jazz Suite No. 1 by Dmitri Shostakovich. We heard Maurice Janssens conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra. Julia Fisher is joining me in the studio this hour. My name is Terrence McKnight. You're listening to Evening Music. And join me tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. I'll bring you a concert from the UN General Assembly Hall where Yo-Yo Ma and the Silk Road Ensemble performed just a few weeks ago. I played that Shostakovich because Julia Fisher, I know she really enjoys his music. And Julie, I'm wondering, is there some particular connection that you have to Dmitri Shostakovich's music?
Actually, there is, because both my parents come from communistic countries, so I was raised knowing exactly what it was like to live under the Soviet regime. My mother is from Czechoslovakia, my father from East Germany. So, listening to the music of Shostakovich, and especially playing the music by Shostakovich, I'm going to play the first violin concerto in 2 weeks from now in Chicago with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. It reminds not only me, but actually I think it should also remind everybody around me, and especially the audience, what it's like to live in a country like that and where there's a dictator. And it might be the truth that in the Western world we don't have these problems, but of course sometimes we seem to have them, and there are still countries where we have no democracy, no freedom, and no human rights. And music of Shostakovich actually reminds you of that, and I think it's very important to be reminded.
Yeah, I guess injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Yes.
This is Julia Fisher, and she'll be playing with the New York Philharmonic and Laura Mazel Mozart's Concerto No. 5. And Julie, I'm not going to play that while you're here because I don't want to get somebody else's violin in your ear. And so I'll wait till you leave, and I'm going to play Mozart's No. 5. But I'm going to play some music. Julie, it's got a new CD coming out. Julia, when does your CD come out?
It comes out on January 27.
Ooh, that's exciting.
With Bach violin concertos. I'm actually playing and conducting the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. And yeah, it's nice to see your surprising face on that. There's also the double concerto in D minor, where I play with violinist Alexander Sitkovetsky, who is also a very good friend of mine. And another good friend of mine, Andrei Rubtsov, he joins me in the concerto for oboe and violin in C minor.
Yeah, now you've been on tour with St. Martin.
Yes, right. And I'm going to be on tour with them now again in February in the States, actually.
Okay. So this is your debut CD with Decca Records, right?
It's my debut CD with Decca Records, my debut CD with leading an orchestra And my debut CD with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, although we've played like at least 50 concerts together already.
Yeah. Let me ask you, your instrument, you play a Jean-Baptiste Guadagnini. And when I met you, you were playing Tchaikovsky. Do you use the same bow for Tchaikovsky that you use for Mozart and Bach?
No. I have three different bows. I have one really fantastic one by Benoit Roland, made in Boston. Actually only last year, or 2006 it was made. It's really phenomenal, and I use this bow usually for everything. If I play only Mozart one night, then I have also another bow from Vienna by Thomas Gerwitt, also a modern one, which is also very nice for early classical. So Haydn, Mozart, and early Beethoven, I play sometimes also with that bow, but the Roland bow I can actually use for anything.
Okay, so we're gonna hear movement from the E major concerto. It's BWV 1042. Remember which bow you're using for this one?
Actually, the Roland bow. Yes.
Okay, all right. Here it is. This is the middle movement.
Thank you.
A Preview of Things to Come. That's Julia Fischer playing music by Johann Sebastian Bach. It's on her brand new CD that's coming out in January 27th, and that's 7 days after a big day here in the States, Inauguration Day. Now, Julia, you're from Germany, and earlier this summer, our president-elect was in your country, and it was a kind of a huge deal because so many Germans came out to hear what Barack Obama had to say. And I know that you had a concert on November 4th,
mm-hmm.
and you were home. You were in Germany playing a concert on November 4th. So I want to get you to tell us maybe about the climate back home on a U.S. Election Day.
I think that actually everybody in Germany was more excited on that day than on a German election day, first. Secondly, every person I saw on November 5th was looking really, really, really tired because everybody was on the TV until 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to see until they called Ohio, actually. So it was, yeah, America is a very important country to Germany, not only economical-wise, but it's like a big brother country to most German people. And even if in the past 8 years many Germans criticized and were not satisfied, etc., etc., and I mean, not only Germans, obviously, still, America is so important to Europe that an American election is also important to Germany, obviously. And when I saw the faces on November 5th, it was amazing to see how lucky and happy they suddenly and confident they suddenly looked, actually. Because, I mean, everybody thought that after the polls, that everybody thought that it's going to be Barack Obama. But, of course, you don't know until November 4th. So everybody was so happy and glad. And I'm actually very happy as well myself, I must say.
So you said people were hanging around until Ohio was called. So that sounds to me like people were really tuned into how this election was going to play out in terms of the electoral votes and what was needed for this guy to get in office. So people were that in tune in Germany with this election?
Yes, absolutely. And even it was very unfair because German TV had like a 24-hour U.S. election thing going at the state TV, the ARD, the first German TV station. And we can also receive CNN. And actually, the German TV called Ohio earlier than the American TV station did. So one would actually sit around and say, yeah, but German TV was already called Ohio. Why doesn't CNN? And sometimes with other states, it was the other way around. CNN already showed that it's for Barack Obama and the German TV station didn't. So it was really very, you saw it from every side and it was very exciting.
Music and politics here on WNYC. So you played a concert November 5th. Now, so was there a change in your in the dynamic of your concert from November 4th to November 5th?
I don't know. Of course, on November 5th, I was very happy. On November 4th, before I went on stage, I thought, hopefully, everybody does the right choice. I don't think it really influences the playing on stage or the concert itself.
Well, let's talk about American audience or this New York audience. You've played here before, but you played here a few nights ago, and then you're going to play here Friday night. Do you see a difference or do you detect a difference in audiences around the world as you play?
Actually, yes, I do. Yeah. Very much so. And even in, it's difficult to say the American audience because especially in the New York audience is actually very different from the rest of the states, I find.
How so?
I think that actually in New York, for my taste, they are the most educated American audience. And so I felt, especially, for example, yesterday, the audience was amazingly quiet and listened fantastically. And the American audience can be very enthusiastically. That's also possible in other American cities, but I think they listen the best, actually.
Julia Fischer here in our studio at WNYC, 93.9 FM, WNYC New York, WNYC.org. We've got more of her music coming up as this program continues. You can talk to Julia at the blog, WNYC.org. Click on music and talk to Terrence. Julia, I know you got to get out of here, but you live in Germany, you live in Munich, and I'm just wondering if you've ever played like in any of the places where Mozart played or where Beethoven played, any of these historic monuments that they've come to be?
Actually, I played a concert in Bonn once when I was like 15, which was one of the, it was a very small concert hall and actually close to Bonn, and that's where Beethoven gave one of his first concerts. And in 2006, I played and actually recorded a tape with a piano trio by Mozart in Mozart's birth house in Salzburg, playing on Mozart's violin, Jonathan Gillard playing on Mozart's piano, and Daniel Müller-Schott playing cello. Yeah, that was quite extraordinary.
Mozart's violin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's of course, it's an amazing feeling knowing that you're holding something in your hands which Mozart himself touched and played and even probably composed on. And it was also interesting to see the sound of this violin. It's a smaller violin. It's not a whole violin. It's much smaller, actually. And it has a very clear, a crystal clear sound, actually, exactly how you would imagine that, that Mozart should sound. That's what we are always trying to achieve when we play Mozart, that that kind of sound is coming out of the instrument. And on his violin, that was actually much easier.
My guest has been Julia Fischer. Julia, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
And check out Julia. She's got a website. You can check out her website, juliafischer.com. She's playing with the New York Philharmonic Friday night, Saturday matinee, and Saturday night. She's playing Mozart number 5. And she's got a record coming out, Bach, and that's coming out in January 27th. It's on the Decca record label. You'll be hearing a lot more from Julia as long as I'm here at WNYC. My name is Terrence McKnight. You can talk to me at WNYC.org. Click on music, talk to Terrence. And here's Julia playing more music by Johann Sebastian Bach. We've got some more great stuff coming up. Stay with us.